Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, your host for Arts, Music, and Culture in Baltimore. Today, my guest is Sheraton Costa. She owns the Alchemy of Art Gallery and Boutique in Fells Point. Sheraton Costa is a 31-year-old Baltimore native who has her BFA in photography from the Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, California. She spent 12 years in California, 6 in Santa Barbara, and 6 in San Francisco. Following her time spent in college, she worked as a server and a freelance photographer. While working as an off and on, doesn't really matter, I guess they're both the same, freelance photographer, she also created a personal project series to showcase. While on the West Coast, Sheraton has shown her personal work and has even helped out put together a gallery show. It wasn't always easy to find venues to show artwork, and knowing countless artists who felt the same way, it was discouraging to be among so many talented people and having only so many places to share their expression and their talents. With these thoughts in mind and being abroad on a travel excursion in India, Sheraton had plenty of time to think about what she really wanted to do, and to see so many women without the chance or education to do so in India made her reevaluate what she really wanted to do. Upon returning to San Francisco, Sheraton decided it was time to take a chance to make her dream and other dreams come true. It just wouldn't be in San Francisco, so she decided to return to Baltimore, a place she called home, to open an art gallery and craft boutique. This was a way for her to share her passion for the arts and to help support the people she knew to be such talented artists. Sheraton chose Baltimore for its eclectic style of art and music. Baltimore's art scene was good, but limited to one or two neighborhoods, and having lived across the country, she felt she could find a neighborhood in need of a little art revival and bring local art and non-local art of all mediums to the community. She has done so with the Alchemy of Art Gallery and Boutique here in Fells Point, Baltimore, and hopes to help share her passion for the arts, to use it to bring art to the community, and to help it bring the art community together, whether it be photography, painting, sculpture, sewing, installations, film, music, what have you. She wants it not to be defined by a medium, but to help artists have a place to show their work and a place for people to come and see the amazing talent that is out there. Thanks for coming here, Sheraton. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am 2 years back in Baltimore, photographer who has put the camera aside for a little bit to take on what I consider a much larger art project, which is starting a business that pretty much brings in people to show what is art, taking a building and turning it into something that is so much more than just a room, and having it have life, and to bring people who have these amazing pieces of work, whatever they may be. I've met a lot of really creative individuals who do sculpture or painting. We had an exhibit of this duo of female who created an entire solar system of sewn pieces with a hand-sewn tent in one room. And to change the space, which is, for me, the definition of alchemy, which is why I named the building, the Alchemy of Art, is to turn something of little value into great value. And to me, art is that. So having this building be a venue to share that is what I've come back to do, and to really give people a space to come and be able to feel that, experience it. I feel like with the internet, and God bless it, because otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here right now and having people around the world hear me, people tend to also look at art online and not be able to go and see texture, feel texture, talk to artists. And I want them to come into a room in the same way you would walk into, the Louvre, but this is for people who are up-and-coming artists that you're never going to see unless they have a place to show. So it's getting people out there to see what's actually happening today, not a Jackson Pollock that you can see travel the country. But these are people who are actively pursuing what they're doing now, not dead, gone, and, worshipped by the art community. These are people that should be recognized for what they do and the fact that they keep doing something that is kind of been lost. So I've been trying to build that. That's what I'm doing in the present moment.
Well, we're going to talk more about that, but let's go back a little bit with the history of Sheraton, part one. You got a BFA in photography. How did you get interested in photography, and why California?
Okay. Well, I'll give you a little history as into how I got even into photography. My grandmother gave me this tiny roll of film camera, you know, the kind that was like, looked like a Klondike bar, and, you know, you slapped away. And I did that when I was 10, 11 years old, and they'd get my film developed, and I'd be like, oh, so stupid, you know, like leaves and grass, you know, my dog's face too close and out of focus. And then I started, I got into an ambassador program that took me to Australia for 3 weeks, and I was 14 years old.
Wow.
And because I'm going someplace so unique, why not have a camera and go take photos? It's an opportunity. So my dad, kindly enough, my mom was very artistic and always put me in painting classes. I did pottery classes, every type of thing. So
good for her.
She would take me to every museum possible. So I've been to a lot of places. And so the next step was, you know, oh, you're going to be here. You might as well take photographs of it. So I got a camera and I found out there how much I truly love taking photographs. So at 14, I started my passion with photography. Mm-hmm. Granted, I was just an amateur and I went to private school, so I didn't really have a photography program.
Mm-hmm.
We did have my senior year. I created a elective program, which was like meeting once a month where you talked about photography and brought in some photos. But it was never anything serious. And when I started to look at colleges, my dad, he took me to go visit a handful of colleges, and he was noticing that my trend was looking into having at least my undergraduate program, maybe not my major, but my my second major would be photography. He started to look into schools that specialize in photography without even asking me. So
now, you're from Baltimore, but was this in Baltimore?
This was in Baltimore when I was looking. So I went to private school here. I went to Maryville.
Mm-hmm. I did, too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Back when they still allowed boys?
Yeah, in the 60s.
You might know my uncle.
Yeah?
Ralph Costa.
No, I don't. When did he graduate? I graduated in 70. It was grade school for co-ed.
I 7 years I survived.
All right, me too. I was graduate, 8 or 9, I think. I went to pre-primary.
Graduated class of 2001. So while I was like looking at colleges, he found Brooks Institute of Photography online, and he flew us out to Santa Barbara, which, let me tell you, as an 18-year-old, you get out of an airplane in a place like Santa Barbara, I smelled things that looked like the definition of beauty. I didn't even know how to explain it. I was like, I care less if I go to the school. I'm definitely living here. But the program was really great. The school was renowned for its ability to have some of the best photographers come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do it, you're going to do it there. Unfortunately, at the time when I started to go there, they had also both been bought out by a corporation. So they were filling classrooms a little bit more than usual. And they were also letting in 18-year-olds, such as myself. They often traditionally would have let in people who had at least had 2 years of community college. So you get the, I'm a stupid college student out of your system, which I did my first year. Definitely regret it as I'm older, but you know, I definitely made up for it, you know, my last 2 years. But it was a highly intensive school where we'd take classes every 2 months, two different classes, and it was highly intensive. You'd just go through the program like that. We got 3 weeks off at the most. We'd have a week off, but it was a prep week between each month. But you're still doing work, and you really can't go far with that. So, you know, I spent my time there. I actually majored in photojournalism.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of, you know, ambulance chasing and finding the oldest woman in town. You know, my dream was, you know, National Geographic photographer. And then I met a lot of National Geographic photographers and realized, this is
not your dream.
No, I mean, you know, those people are some of the strongest individuals you will ever meet. They spend 6 months researching something, and then they spend 3 months to 6 months out in a field where they're probably getting some sort of disease or sickness that, while waiting,
you have to get such glorious pictures.
Well, of course,
good
yeah.
Gosh.
And that's the thing. And they don't have lives, which, if that's your true passion, God bless you. But they also only have a certain number of staff photographers, and then they freelance everything else. And sometimes if you bring in a freelance photography program, like, oh, here's my project, I did this, I went to the Serengeti, they might like your photos, but then go with another photographer and send them out there. So I was like, this is a little risky for me to do. I'm good, I'm not that good. So I learned, you know, that where my strengths were. And I started to also dabble in typography, page layout design, advertisement. I was really into that, nature photography, landscape photography, stock imaging, which you can make great money. Unfortunately, I also graduated when a billion other photographers graduated. Yeah. Everyone was, you know, you have doctors out there with cameras, you have kids out there with cell phones. Everyone can be a photographer.
Sure.
And if you have enough money and enough time, you can go anywhere and take beautiful photographs. I promise you, you go to the Bahamas, everywhere you look on a, you know, a secluded beach is going to be beautiful. And that also is something to be, there's something to be said for that, because even those people deserve the ability to show their work if it's good. But so I went to school and I got my BA. I learned a lot of stuff. I met a lot of incredible photographers, filmmakers, script writers, production managers, car photographers, people who were in the industry that, like myself, would have never had a chance to meet. Kind of just wanted to take some time and figure it out. And I, you know, the easiest thing to do is get into waitressing. You can make rent easily, and I was good at it. I was very good at it. But it also is an avenue where you can take off. You know, I can take off a week and make that up in the next week.
Right.
And I can go travel or work on a project or say, I need to have this night off. You know, 9 to 5, you can't do that, and you don't have the availability to work with those things. So I had done that a little bit in Santa Barbara, and I ended up working for a job that kept me there 6 days a week, and so I wasn't doing very much photography. So I bailed out of that, came back here, actually, for about 6 months, and that's where I helped produce an art show, like a gallery show, which was incredible. It was when Load of Fun, which is up off Howard, first opened. And our friend knew the teacher who was setting it up, which was a bunch of artist studios and a huge space to show work. It's an old either furniture warehouse or it was a car warehouse. So it's 3 stories. Definitely had a lot of work to be done to it. Lots of steps missing, some holes in walls. But huge space, beautiful. So the first art show they allowed our friend to kind of put together, and he had asked me and a couple of our other friends to help him out. So not only did I get to put work in there, I also was helping create a 5-person slideshow, hang artwork, light the show, get the wine sponsorships, I made the flyers for the event, getting them printed, distributing them in the community. We got bands. It was amazing. And that was my first taste of like what it was like to put something like that together. And, you know, we had 5 bands. We probably had 500 people come through there.
Wow.
And we had 20 artists, you know? When you have that many people, you get a lot of people coming in the door to see different music, different art, and it was awesome. It was one of my greatest moments. But I had also had planned on moving back to the West Coast.
Right.
So I did that, and then probably a month later, made my way back to San Francisco, up north to San Francisco. I had a lot of art friends up there, and I wanted to live in the big city. And it's a really, really open city, like mentally, physically, everyone's very open and you can be anybody you want to be there. So I obviously moved out there because I was dating a guy. I'm silly like that. But I thank that relationship for getting me there because that city truly does have part of my heart for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to meet a lot of people, especially in the restaurant business, who were hairstylists, musicians. And you just start meeting all these people and you say, oh, you're going to go to this, you're going to have a show? Can I come take photos? And then you get all these great band photographs. And then I had a hairstylist. I was like, hey, would you do hair for this photo shoot I want to do? And then I'd have, you know, one of my coworkers be a model. And then I'd have all of a sudden these amazing bodies of work while all making tons and tons of money in one of the, you know, fanciest food restaurants, you know, ever out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a foodie city. Everybody eats there. Nobody sits inside and cooks. At all. And they have good food there too. So I started building this idea in my head of what I was doing. And I was building these bodies. And I had a couple art shows there. I had a couple pieces in a cafe art show gallery in Santa Cruz. And then I had probably like 20 pieces in this. It was a hair salon, but they did biannual art shows that were really well known for, and it was a ton of fun. I was amongst some really incredible artists. And so, you know, I started meeting all these other artists, and it was funny to hear, you know, what they do and how they, you know, are trying to put their work out there and how much of a struggle it really is. Especially if you're somebody like me who creates their own bodies of work. It's like, where are you going to do it? I can put it in juxtapose, but that's not going to get me anywhere. Maybe. But I do it because I love it. And I know a lot of people who do their work because they love it. But never hurts to sell something on the side. And, you know, I'd sell pieces here and there. And obviously friends would always want me to do work. I did a lot of maternity photos. I did a lot of engagement photos. A handful of weddings, which I don't ever ask me to do because I can't stand it. It's not my forte. And I thank the Lord.
But you had that experience.
It is. And you know what? You can make great money being a wedding photographer, but you definitely have to be a certain person.
Mm-hmm.
I am not
that.
You're
not that person.
Huh? No. I mean, I love going to a wedding, but it's like you have to catch every moment. And, you know, the bride wants to look great. And I've had, like, grooms that were had a mole and, like, you know, they're like, can you get me on this side? And I'm like, okay. This is going to be, you got to cut the cake. You need to move then because you got to cut the cake and you're in the light spot. So, you know, it's one of those experiences where you learn, like, what you want to do. And so while I'm there, you know, I figured I'm going to be a waitress forever. I can be a photographer and I can be a waitress, you know, because I'd do assisting positions. I would do some ins and out jobs. You know, so I was doing all sorts of stuff in the business. And then I, like I said, I went to India. I would go on an excursion that would last 2 weeks, normally to a foreign country every 2 years. That was like my goal. Mm-hmm. I've been to Japan, Peru, did Machu Picchu. I've been to Amsterdam, London. So I thought, you know, I'm really into Hinduism. I'd gone and seen this woman, Amma. She's the hugging saint. And I really enjoyed my Devi Bhavas, which are religious celebrations, but you don't have to really be religious to follow with them.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gives you a hug, it's supposed to be very powerful. And I'd gone to see it several times. And so I was like, oh, you know what? I really want to go to India. And that's how I choose my trips, is that's what I'm going to do. You know, I see something and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So one of my other friends is like, yeah, I want to go to India too. So we book our tickets. We book our hotels. We do a little bit of researching. We get our visas. We get our immunization shots.
Mm-hmm.
And on India we go. The spiritual retreat that I thought I was going to get was spiritual in a whole nother aspect.
Really?
There were some really trying moments for me. India is beautiful, but there are definitely some things. Being a white woman in an environment can be very challenging. But nothing where, you know, I didn't succeed, but I learned that women there don't have exactly the same freedoms and education and opportunities that we do. And while being in this place where I'm, you know, talking to one other female, who my travel companion, while we're both experiencing the same thing, I mean, people were handing me their babies to take pictures with me, and then their kids would be kicking me. I was like, this is not working out. It's like 115 degree heat, which we didn't know because it was in Celsius, and I was like, we had Deli Belly, which if anybody out there knows what Deli Belly is, it's like Montezuma's revenge, but with more revenge.
Oh my goodness.
I was sick for 4 days, and in that type of heat with places that don't necessarily have toilet paper.
So you had a big dose of India reality.
Oh, yeah. I was like, whoa, this is fun. Like, wow, you know, this is beautiful. There's a lot of color. There's a lot of people. I mean, there are tons of people there. Tons of poverty. And it's just one of those things where you then start to realize, like, what am I doing? Not that I think that waitressing is a completely admirable job. Everybody needs to go out and eat. Sure. And you can be great at what you do. I know more about food and wine than most people should.
I'm sure you do.
And I love that, you know. But I was thinking, you know, I'm fortunate from a very unfortunate situation. So I had a little money put aside. And I then started, you know, hearing one of my friends talk about how he wanted to move to New York to open an artist studio warehouse. And I had been talking about how cool would it be to own a gallery? Wouldn't that be really neat? Like in the bottom of your space. And, oh, you know, all these little pieces started trickling down as to, you know, because my friend would ask me, oh, well, what is it that you really want to do with your life? In the end, when you turn around and you're staring yourself in the face, what is it that you want to do? And I was like, you know, I don't really know, but I know I love art. And, you know, it's been a prominent piece of my life since I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And so I come back. So it didn't fully register there, you know, but I had these great photos. I had this interesting experience of terrifying sickness, lack of equality, but being someplace that a lot of people may never choose to go or have never been to or never will get the chance to go to.
It's a good experience.
It's a great experience.
Despite the culture shock.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's what it is. That's why I went there, was to learn something. And it taught me everything I needed to know, which was to do something.
Yeah, see, I think that's great. I lived abroad for 10 years, and it made me think that if it would be possible, if most Americans could go abroad at least once in their lives, just to understand what it's like to be a different culture, you know, and to go through what you went through. I went through that. I lived in Northern Ireland. It was terrific people, but it took me a while to understand what they were saying, basically, because it is a very thick accent, but wonderful, wonderful people.
It's all about marbles.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Demosthenes. Yeah, it's like. But another thing is, and also you define places that you don't know too much about by one thing. Now, a lot of people in Europe think that Baltimore's about the wire, which is ridiculous. And we think that every step you take in Northern Ireland, a bomb goes off.
Right.
But it's not true at all, you know?
No, you have to go there to experience it.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. You know, there would be such a better understanding of how people operate if people just went to another place across the water once in their lives, you know. So it's great that you went periodically to different places, experiences, whether it was good or bad. It still is an experience that you take back with you, and it forms what you're doing now and in the future.
And I would never call it bad, you know, because there are plenty of people who experience, like, their lives are different than mine. I can't tell them what they're doing is wrong. If a woman wants to be that way, and, you know, I'm okay with that. If they don't, I wish they had a better chance. Mm-hmm. I just realized that I do have the opportunity, and I don't look down upon anybody, because there's, you know, we all have our personal struggles. We all have our challenges, our limitations, our choices. And this was my chance to make my choice. And, you know, I'd stopped home on my way from India back to San Francisco here in Baltimore because one of my best guy friends, who also is a photographer, was getting married. And I was like, okay, perfect. It's a nice little layover from...
Did you do the photography?
No, I did not. No, I did not. Not after that trip. I literally got off that plane and I was like, somebody give me a cocktail. I'm going to sit in the sun. It's like 15 degrees cooler here, maybe 20.
Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Fahrenheit difference. And
that's great.
I was like, I just want to have
with that too.
Yeah, I was like, I just want to have a good time, you know? So I celebrated. I got to see a lot of my friends. I had to see, you know, every time I came home, I'd see people having these lives. And, you know, I spent 10 years with people asking me, when you coming home? When you coming home? And I was like, I don't know. Stop asking me that question. And then, you know, it's like, oh, you're coming home. Whoa.
Didn't ever see
you doing that. And then, you know, everyone.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh.
But I got to see, like, my dad. And, like, every time I leave my dad, it's really hard because he's just, like, you know, obviously you can tell from the get-go, he's been such a supporter. And, you know, my brother has 5 kids and they live in Delaware. It's really hard to come home once a year, spend a day with them, and then leave. It's like Aunt Sheridan is not really a word. They're like, who's that girl who keeps coming by? You know, I'm like, oh, they're like, oh, Aunt Sheridan's the one who sends us gifts. We like her. I'm like, oh, great. So it started to get to be that. And in San Francisco, it's also really hard to have matrimonial relationships. And I don't know if monogamous relationships. I found for me, and I saw a lot of women go through it, because there are so many people. It's such a transient city. Not just is it having personal relationships with men, women, or women, women, men, men, whatever it may be, love relationships. It was hard to watch friends that you make go back to where they came from or go to a new space, because San Francisco is so expensive. It's very hard to own a home there.
Yeah.
It's, like, almost impossible. It's actually the most expensive place to, like, live.
Right. I was thinking that when you were saying that. And when you said, oh, open up a gallery in New York, I thought, boy, that's very tough.
Well, he was going to Brooklyn and, you know.
But still Brooklyn.
He still hasn't done that yet. So, hence that thought. And God bless him for doing it. He's doing something else.
Sure. No, I'm not taking anything away from him, but I'm just saying, wow, it's a tough way to go.
But it was just one of those things where I watched a lot of people come and go. And granted, now I have friends everywhere from, like, Hawaii to, I think I have a friend who's now in London. So it's like they're like, you know, they end up going several different places.
Thing, yeah.
But you can't settle down there. So what are you going to do? And I just started thinking, you know, I want to do something. And then I literally, we flew back to San Francisco. And I wake up the next morning. It felt like I had an elephant on my chest. It's like, I can't breathe. And I got stressed out in India. I've gotten stressed out before in my life. But this wasn't stress out. This was straight up anxiety. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's... I started crying. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to leave. Well, first, actually, what I did was... And my best friend was like staying with me in my condo at the time. And I also had a friend, the guy who was going to go to New York. He was visiting from New York. We're all like staying there. And like, I wake up first because I'm obviously a little up in my head. And I start looking up how expensive buildings are in Baltimore. And then I go up to the roof and I start crying and I call my dad and I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to move home. Like, this is, I'm going to open an art gallery and I'm going to do it in Baltimore. Like, this is how I go about things. That's how I do it. It's like all of a sudden the light goes on. Mm-hmm. I make the decision. Sure. I made sure I found out if I could do it in my price range, because the last thing you want to do is move someplace. If I were moving from here to San Francisco thinking that, I would never be able to accomplish it. I had a condo there that cost more than my converted convent that's three stories in Fells Point. Which is stupid. It was a one bedroom. So I knew, I was like, I can do this. This I can do. And
so let me ask you, what was Dad's first reaction?
You know what? He knows that I'm slightly crazy. So this, it was, you know, he was like, you know what? You're going to do what you want to do. And I had, at that point, a really sound business plan. Strangely enough, it was already set out. I was like, I'm going to come home. I'm going to start looking at neighborhoods. I'm going to start talking to the art community. I'm going to then look for a building. I'm going to have a building that I have, you know, enough space to rent out a bedroom, maybe two bedrooms, so that it helps float my business. And then I will have my business on the first floor. And then I'm going to start having an art gallery. As like, I want to have these types of things, because I also wanted to do short film projections. I wanted to have bands. And he was like, well, it sounds like you kind of have an idea. I did also tell him I was going to take business classes, which I never did because I hate school, which I probably should have done. But I'm doing pretty good despite it.
That's good.
But
tell him the real reason. You had to get back to Maryvale alumni.
Most definitely. I still, oh gosh, I don't even think I think I drove one of my friends there because it's always, I mean, that castle is beautiful, but it's also like people are like, at school, and then they're like, look at this, and they're like, you came from this? And I was like, I know, a little weird.
It was cool going to school in a castle. And all the rumors about, I remember Dr. Wick owned it before the nuns did, and
you know
he died in the lake.
What? I did not know that. Well, did you know that he built that?
I don't think he did, but that's what we all thought.
He built that for his wife in the similar fashion of Warwick Castle.
Right, yeah.
So that's why.
It's cool.
Yeah. Or Windsor Castle.
Windsor Castle,
so
you're right.
Similar,
you're right. Yeah, that's right.
Like a mini version. I actually know where all the hiding places, all the like trick doors and everything like that, because we used to do tours of that.
Oh, well, so we used to really sneak down there. Well, they used to have something called Johnny Appleseed Day, which would be out on the hockey field. And these guys come down in parachutes and stuff and throw apples at kids.
What?
And such.
We did not get that. That is not
so
fair.
When that happened. I never questioned what happened. It's just, doesn't this happen with everybody? We snuck into the nuns' quarters one time, and the first thing I saw was a toilet, which scared the hell out of me. And I was about eight, and I thought, wow, they actually go. Because we never saw them, you know? They put us in lines, whether we had to go or not. And we never saw them go, so we thought, a dove took it away or something.
I know. Well, Sister Sean, who is our headmistress, she was fantastic. She is a very, very kind woman, and I really, really loved having her as our headmistress. She recently retired, which is a sad, but, you know, everyone has their time. But I used to remember we'd always be like, you'd literally be, like, doing any naughty thought in your head. You know, like, I'm going to look to see if I could ever get out of class. Never gonna happen, because she'd like pop up right next to you and be like, how did you get here? Whoa, you're like real creepy. Which is funny, because the building that I own now is a convent. It's a converted convent. It was actually housing nuns that taught. They were Felician nuns that taught at Holy Rosary, which is...
Oh, right down the street here, yeah?
Right. So I'm right there. So I own the convent that they lived
in. Wow.
And my dad always likes to joke. He goes, I always told you you'd end up in a convent. Like, sure, you thought it wouldn't be like this, but whatever. And the first question everybody asked me is it haunted? I'm like, not in the least.
Huh. Could it be an extra added attraction?
If it was. Well, we've had...
At least like the basement, or just say the basement is or something.
Well, the basement... I had to like tell myself that it looked more like a wine cellar because it was pretty creepy at first. It's all exposed brick, you know, so you're like down there.
Just
and
go
like,
down there in the daytime.
It's really quiet. Yep. Pretty much. Well, I had to get over that once the power went out in the middle of the night and I didn't know what was going on and we had to find the fuses, the boxes, and I was like, well, this is
creak.
It. Yeah. This is what's going to happen. I got over that quick.
That's good. Well, we digress about Maryville. We got to do a show about Maryville,
oh,
I think.
Like that. I have a lot of
because I was there during when Vatican II came. So one, I mean, it was like instantaneous that nuns went from wearing habits to skirts.
Oh, creepy.
Really? And it was weird. Well, somewhat creepy, but some of them that did that were really good nuns,
right.
Really good teachers.
Yeah.
And others were just, I'll see you at 3 o'clock. Oh, man. So let's
sure
get back to...
I'm sure you got that a lot.
Oh, I did occasionally, but and then I threw Ricky Chaplin's shoe in the lake and the nun went and got it.
What?
In her dress
floated
up. It was weird because it was a real staid nun that you wouldn't think.
Where
you know, used to yell at me.
That's where
Sister
you need
Marie
a camera.
Letitia. Yeah,
that's when you need
I know.
A camera.
But this is 1965
not
or something, and
had
like
one.
We didn't have a
the brownie.
Brownie or anything
yeah.
with me. So anyway, back to the gallery. Tell me a bit about the gallery and boutique.
Okay, so October 2nd of 2013, we opened the gallery. So I have, it's all on the first floor. So I have three rooms that I use. And the first room is on the left. I painted it completely black, which I absolutely love. It's really hard to maintain, but damn if they do, damn if they don't. Everything in that room that doesn't have a black frame pops.
Mm-hmm.
Color pops, black and white pops. It's just incredible. Incredible what that room can do for a body of work.
It's also good for video, too.
It is. And, you know, it's just a unique thing. You don't go into a lot of art galleries and see a black room. It's not usual. You'll see a gray one. Mm-hmm. Not often black. But then we have a little bathroom just after that room. And then you walk down a little further down the hallway, which has a big logo of the Alchemy of Art and a beautiful chandelier. And then you'll go to the room on the right, which is completely white. It's the chapel room. So, and it literally...
It's Maryville again. Jeez,
I know.
I don't believe she does it.
But there's a beautiful half dome with a small mm-hmm. stage. And the acoustics in there, like, well, we have acoustic shows. I can't do anything.
Really?
It's hard to do anything with amplification
mm-hmm.
because it just reverbs
just
every...
Just goes all
so
over
it's
the place.
So, yeah,
nothing
it's
to
so
bounce
big.
Off of.
Yeah,
maybe?
It's just too big and too much sound in there. But it's really cool. We hang everything off this molding line. And things look really beautiful because it's crisp white. And it's a nice ability to have the opposite of the other room. So it's really cool. And then you go through this other door. It is like a slight maze
mm-hmm.
at times. And there's a step down, which people tend to miss, so they always fall. I'm tempted to put a camera there because I have a sign that says, watch your step. But nobody reads anything. And they always fall out. And I'm like, oh, my God, this happens. And then the same people who fall out it tend to fall in the door. I'm like, you didn't feel that last fall? So I'm like, normally just like sit there and I giggle, you know? And I actually sit on we have like this little small room between that, you know, that step down. There's like this small room and then into where what used to be the dining room,
mm-hmm.
which is now the boutique. I have this big long pew that they had left. I even have a sacrament holder. I've had some cool stuff that they left in that house, which weren't from the nuns. It's from the people who owned it before me. And I think this woman who used to own an antique dealership out of the first floor of the gallery, convent. So it had already been rezoned, which was kind of what I obviously needed. So then we have the boutique, which we carry all sorts of stuff. I have beautiful handmade pottery. I have t-shirts, screen-printed t-shirts. We have bedazzled pottery sets that are made from this awesome artist who I'm hoping that she finally gets to put her new body of work together. Her name's Jessie Fole. She was supposed to do Sexposé at AVAM, but she hasn't gotten enough money together to do it. But she had done a show at our place as well. And her work's really cool. Modern pop-esque style. But we also have these really cool... those old...
No, AVAM is American Visual Arts Museum.
Yes.
Explain it to
people.
Sorry, a lot
Some
of people use
might
acronyms,
not know.
I
yeah.
think. People in Serbia that are listening to you again.
Yeah, well,
AVAM.
I mean... Well, in AVAM, you know, the beauty of that place is that they only accept artists that are untrained.
Right.
So that's always cool.
Yeah.
And then we also have things like, you know, those dinosaurs that you'd find in, like, the doctor's office? They're big enough to, like, handle. I know a girl who turned them into, like, little air plant terrariums.
Really?
So we have those. I have porcelain flasks. We've got jewelry. And some of the stuff is not Baltimore made. Most of the people I have met from Baltimore Art Shows, like Pile of Craft, which happens once a year at St. John's Church, Be More Art Flea. I try to go to a lot of those things and pick up different artists and different things, and we put new stuff in. But I get cool stuff like China Knuckles, which is brass knuckles, but made out of china.
Really?
So it's just kind of silly, fun stuff, but artistic. We even have prints. We've got photography, painting, hand sketching. Just some really cool stuff from people that you're just not going to find everywhere. So that is something where if you were to be needing a gift, you want a local present, like something you're not going to find for everybody, or, you know, it's unique, you're not going to be able to get it at Walmart, you come to the Alchemy of Art and you get an awesome gift. Scarfs, whatnot. But the gallery part, we have the art exhibitions. We change up our artwork every month, which is pretty frequent.
It's pretty big. Task, yeah.
It's a huge
task. To hang
task.
Every month, but you get a lot of people in there.
It gets people coming in, and, you know, it also... The turnover does get people coming back.
It supports a lot of artists.
It does. And, you know, I also often... Certain artists, we ask them to come back if we know they're going to have another body of work. But it also gets people coming in the door. It gives you a chance to buy stuff. And if somebody's looking for something we've had in the past, I'll send them in the right direction. Often we'll keep certain pieces and we'll put them in the boutique so then they're purchasable. So at the beginning of the month, we'll have, I call it First Thursday because we have it on First Thursday. It's our open gallery reception for the new artwork. Sometimes we do solo shows. Sometimes we'll do up to 5 or 6 artists. I prefer the multi-artists shows because I feel like we get more people to see different types of art. So it's not somebody who's coming just to support an artist or likes this type of art, but you get mixed people being like, oh, I never thought of seeing something like this. This is really cool. I would have never ended up coming to see this. So I like those because you get multi-pollination in a sense of different views.
Very good.
And we normally will have like a DJ or a live band. And then, you know, we have a big evening of it. And we have snacks. I do BYOB. I like to stay by the law. I believe in not getting in trouble over that. And you know what? It's
good
cheaper for everybody else.
See? That's a good business plan.
And there's a liquor store right across the street from me.
And
it's open 7 days a week, so I really can't do any harm. So I'm supporting local business by having a local business. We do a closing reception, which is normally the last Sunday. Sometimes we do it the second to last Sunday. Sometimes we do it the last Sunday.
And this is being recorded August the 19th, and there's one this Sunday. Right?
Yes, which is the 24th.
Right.
And it's going to be a day show. Sometimes we choose to do it during the day just because you can get a different crowd in there. That's why we do a Thursday night, which is a weeknight. It's popular to come out. It's not like it's super late. And then we do like a Sunday one so the people who work 9 to 5 can still make it. Sometimes we do a day one, 2 to 6, which is what this Sunday is going to be. It makes it so that you can come out and have a good time and it's not pressure. And it's funny because I find that people are like, oh, I can't make it. I'm like, you can't make it for 30 minutes to come look at some art? That's not an excuse. I feel like people feel like they need to spend the entire 3 hours there. I'm like, no, stop in, just look at it, be a part of it. We even were doing over the summer, which I wish were a little bit more consistent, but it was hard to make it all happen. We were doing short films out back in the courtyard. I have an incredible enclosed courtyard that the two surrounding walls that are not my building are covered in ivy. People come back there and like, I just want to spend all day here. And I'm like, come by on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday when I'm open. Go right ahead. Hang out back all you want. But we do these short films where we set up a screen and we have our projector. And we've had an animation night. We did a DJ mashup that they played to another gentleman's video mix-up clips. And we've done some other animations. And so we're trying to get people to be able to see short films. It's something you can put on a loop. People can come in. We normally have popcorn. You talk about art. It gets people in the door. They can look at the artwork. Everything in the gallery is still open. But it's another form of art.
It's a great idea, and it sounds very casual, too.
It is.
Anything officious or somebody up there lecturing you or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely don't try to do that, and we don't try to make anything late. I know a lot of art galleries like to do the party thing. I'm not that. I want to be a unique, comforting art gallery for all ages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been trying to focus on that because people are like, oh, come on, just let it stay open until, like, 2 in the morning. I'm like, I have people who live here. I live here.
Yeah. Like, so you live above?
I live on the third floor, yeah. So not only am I an art gallery owner, but I am a landlord as well. Mm-hmm. And we actually also have two artists who work out of the basement. We have this incredible woodsman. His name is John Waters, but he is not the John Waters that you know of. But if you ever need to find him for some woodwork, find him at a food market in Hamden. His work is incredible. He's really great. And then we have the female duo I told you about, the Dandy Vagabonds. They had done the solo show with the solar system and the handmade tent, which they probably worked in the basement for like 100 hours on that tent. That thing was beautiful. They also used a separate tent that they had made for the lantern parade that's in Patterson Park.
Oh, right.
Which for the first time got to experience last year. And so funny, I'll talk to people about it. I'm like, oh my God, this festival is so awesome. People are like, I didn't know that happened. I was like, neither did I. Luckily, my artists in the basement were part of it and, you know, clued me in to like come check it out. And people like put lights all over their bicycles and make these really inanimate objects that they carry around or these mobile objects. And everyone holds little sticks with lanterns in them in old milk jugs. And you've got every type of person out there. So I like that.
So this Sunday is the closing of one show. What's the next show and when does it open?
The next show is on September 4th, the first Thursday of the month. We try to keep that as consistent as possible so that people always know. You're never going to not know. We'll either always start at either 6:30 or 7, and normally goes to 10:30 or 11.
So you have a few days to hang, then.
I do. Well, we also, you know, sometimes we close the shows down a little bit early so that we can do some repairs. Some repaints.
Sure. Yeah,
which we're going to have a huge one of those
sometimes
eventually.
Sometimes the walls are...
Well, black wall with, you know, holes
with the
in
plaster
it.
Coming
yeah,
at you.
Yeah, nothing quite like that. That has been a nightmare. I have once we do a full painting job of that room again, like a hardcore one, I'm probably going to put up rails and try to limit the amount of holes. I won't say no to them, but I'll limit it as much as possible if we don't have to.
Yeah.
Because it...
Yeah, some artists get hole nuts.
Well, we had one that probably put in like 250 holes in my wall, and I was just like staring at it, like like choking on my own throat. I was like, oh my God. Pulling those pins out, I was like, I've got to curse this. Like,
well, that's what you do. It's still a good experience.
It is.
You know, you've learned.
No, exactly. And you know what? This business is a forever learning experience. It's also learning how to communicate with artists what I need from them on what date and how important is they get it to me. It's interesting to work with. So many creative minds are very interesting to work with because they are all in different locations, different. Sure. They have different schedules, different thought patterns. So I'm learning to deal with all those and how to get that across while also trying to build a clientele that wants to buy art, wants to be a part of this. It's not easy by any means. But we're working on it, and I think that it's going in the right direction.
Right. Sounds wonderful. You're less than a year old, and the anniversary comes up in October. You have any big plans?
Yes. We actually have two artists that we're showcasing on the walls, and then we also have live art experience. So we have, like, this one of the young girls that she came in and found me, and she's like, hey, I want to do this thing. I want to do live art. And I was like, what are you talking about? Her name's Monique Dove, and she is very creative. She is very into the community. She wants to start a program for after-school program for kids to give them opportunities to show them what people in their community are doing and that they can do it, and to kind of start figuring out what you want to do and some place to help them tutor and do stuff like that. And I find what she does very admirable.
Oh, sounds wonderful.
But she has pulled together some artists, such as, like, hairstylists, painters, I think some musicians, and she's going to have them do what they do on stage. And I think that's really cool, because you're actually watching somebody do it while you also have all this art on the walls. So, in hoping that it doesn't rain, we'll have, you know, some live music out back and obviously, you know, a plethora of food.
You can still do that till through, you know, October and such.
Oh, most definitely. I would just say as in rain.
Yeah, that's
about
true.
Those hurricanes that come on up that last a little bit longer than September.
Well, you get the person in the basement that made that tent just to make one. That's
big
very
one,
good.
I know, right? Yeah. I think I've got, I always like to be like my little elves in the basement sewing away. You know, it's hard when you get into your own business to go and do other things. I started, you know, I was very invested. I was like, I'm going to go to bed early. I'm going to get up early. I'm going to do my business, you know. Like, you know, press releases actually take a lot of time, and making flyers and getting artists. I mean, like, I'm actually technically booked through next October with artists. So if artists need space, they're going to have to start coming for the next year and a half, you know, like having their shows in a year and a half from now, which is crazy, but awesome. But I want to start being more of a yes person and starting to, when I don't have events and I have time, to go out and check out other people's events, whether it be, you know, not in the art field. But I also know a lot of bands as well. I've got a ton of bands. If you ever need musicians, come to me. I've got a ton of them that would love to chat. But we, I mean, like, we even try to, like, get people who are doing stand-up or improv. We do pop-up clothing shows. We actually just had one half a month ago for Quell Collections. It's a gentleman who makes fine men's clothing. And it was really cool. He had a great list of people. What he had set up for his pop-up was beautiful. And it just brought in a bunch of unique people to come look at it, who were really there to support and to buy and to be a part of something very new and big and awesome. And that's what it's about, is just spreading something that's unique. It's not a, I mean, nobody, nothing's wrong with Target. Everybody needs to go there and get socks, you know, and some stuff like that. Yes, but it's so much better to get something unique. I often,
interesting comparison. It
yeah
comes to mind.
I know.
But you said you're booked, but is there any kind of pockets within that range for somebody to come in and do maybe some type of show that's just that night or something with the show already on other shows?
Yeah, exactly. If it's not hung art, we're all about it. If somebody wants to...
So you're booked on basically the hung art now. So, but there's...
like I said, if
opportunities for other type of mediums and performance art and such.
Yeah, if somebody wants to have show their... Do a CD and release party.
Great. And beautiful segue I just provided. To contact you, they...
You can find me at my email. Is the best way actually to contact me is sassy.sheridan@gmail.com. That's sassy.sheridan@gmail.com. Well, no E. Cut the E off. But, or you can find us on Facebook under The Alchemy of Art. You'll find our page. Please do like us. We always have our events that are going to come up on there. Also, if you find me on Facebook personally, that's under Sheridan Costa. It's S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N, and it's C-O-S-T-A. I will always add you to our invite lists for our events, because I always have event pages as well. Or just give me your email, you know, find me on, you know, like I said, through email, give me your email and I'll send you an email to every event we have. Because we do, we book all sorts of fun things.
Well, what happens here is that you'll be put in the 24/7 rotation, but also we archive everything.
Awesome.
So we'll give you an anchor that you can put on your website that people can click and hear this, what we're talking about.
Most
now.
Definitely.
And also there'll be a link to your website, too,
oh,
so
cool.
People didn't get any of that.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, the ones that didn't have a pen.
I know.
Just, even though they could listen to this anytime, but we won't, we
don't,
won't go.
Don't challenge them that much.
That's true.
Have you ever tried to use the internet? Sometimes I'm like,
yeah, please. We'll have a show about that. We've got about 12 more shows, which is another point I want to bring up. This is not a one-off. I hope you come back and update the gallery, tell us what's going on, and, you know, maybe down the road a bit we'll do some live remotes.
Please do.
That would be terrific, as you're right, conveniently located to the studio.
I know, yeah. You don't have to lug anything anywhere, really.
thank you for coming to Baltimore Internet Radio.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Arts, Music, Culture in Baltimore. I'm Dave Custy, your host here on Baltimore Internet Radio. I've been talking to Sheridan Costa. Did I say it right that time?
You did.
It only took about 20 times. She's the owner of the Alchemy of Art Gallery and Boutique here in Fells Point, Baltimore. And it sounds like a terrific place because it's multimedia and there's so many different ideas can happen. So go and check it out. And thank you very much for listening.